This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0, and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair, each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.
This is a Web Canopy Studio production.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott and Tim Wurzberger. We got a very, so many special guests we've had lately. Former D partner of mine, former Stanley Cup winner. He just retired, it seems like, a couple months ago. The ageless wonder, Brian Campbell. Brian, welcome to the Dropping the Gloves family, I guess. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, it's good. Everything's really good. Obviously, everything that's going on in the world, but, kids are keeping busy and... As you know, it doesn't, your life does not stop.
No, definitely does not. So you told me you were living at your in-laws. How's that? Are they a big help?
Or they are good. No, they help. They help a lot. My father-in-law does a lot of cooking. My mother-in-law helps with the kids. So we're here for about 6 weeks right now. We're kind of in transition. We're building a house in Chicago. So we got kicked out of our old house. And had to move in here for a few weeks. We couldn't quite match it up perfectly, but it's good. They're good people, and they live right in our area, so it works out well.
So what's a Strathroy, Ontario boy doing building a house in Chicago? What kind of – how did that happen?
Well, my wife's from here, so I met her when I was playing here. And they always kind of say you kind of have to follow your wife, especially when you have kids and stuff. And I enjoy it. Plus, working for the Blackhawks now, it's been a great transition away from hockey. Obviously, still in hockey, but away from playing, I should say. Been a really good transition for me that way, to be able to work with the team, learn a lot, and grow. In the business side and the hockey operations, and keep learning.
So does Chicago just hire every ex-Stanley Cup champion right away as soon as they retire? Is that how it works?
Yes, correct.
It's unbelievable.
I think it took me a little while to kind of get figured out what I wanted to do. And last year I did player development. So I was in Rockford with the coaching changes that all happened. The player development guy that was in Rockford working for the defenseman is now the assistant coach there.
Yeah.
In Rockford. So I was down working with them. I really enjoyed it. Being around the young guys, I would go on the bench for some of the games in the American League. But they got a lot of good young D prospects. So it was kind of enjoyable to, like, help them, like, go for practices and do some skill sessions before practice. And then kind of doing some video and just kind of, trying to make their path, as you know, John, just taking a step. Maybe I'm able to take a couple steps away that I had to go through so I can get them to the NHL that much quicker and help out the big team.
Yeah, it is funny. When you're a kid or a prospect going through those stages, getting some knowledge from a guy who's been there, done that, is so much more helpful than just seeing on a board and a coach kind of just drawing it up X's and O's. Like, just having you on the ice, being like, you know what? It's easier if you do it this way. It's more efficient if you do it this way. Is it cool to see the kids progressing when you get to them in the first week and then you see them mid-season? Do you ever see those changes?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I'm learning is you got to be patient. And as you said, it's good when you just said, okay, do you see him at the start of the season? And then halfway through, don't judge them after 10 games, after 5 games. And that's something that I got to improve on as a person that's working for the team and kind of learning the ropes, is you got to really almost say, okay, I'm not going to look at this kid. You are looking at him, but you're not going to look at him again until 40 games and kind of reevaluate him then, or after, you know, even 80 games, because it just takes time and there's so many ups and downs. But it's, you know, something that I'm trying to become better at and be more aware of. And then the age of these guys, you know, you see, we're all looking at the superstars that are in the league at 18, 19, 20. It's like, okay, some guys that path does not happen with. And you got to remember, 21, they're still only 21, or they're,
yeah,
you know, they're still 22 even, you know, it's like, you know, you got to give them time.
Does it ever get frustrating to the kids when you just keep telling them, just do what I did, just get the puck and skate around everybody? Does it ever get frustrating to them?
No, I don't look at it like that, but it's just like, there's little, you know, the little things that you can learn that you pick up along the way, how to, you know, especially even in defensive zone for these guys, it's just like, okay, the running around doesn't help. The guy, if they want to score, they got to come to you and they got to come to the front of the net. So it's kind of like just kind of teaching them like little things. And there's a couple guys that are on the smaller side, so kind of teaching them a few little tricks of the trade to be effective against, you know, bigger players is, you know, it's rewarding for me.
Yeah, that's the thing with young kids. They just want to do everything now. And it's like, I had to learn that too, where instead of trying to fly into the corner and blow someone up, it's better just to let them, you know, have a couple feet and figure out what's happening, and then you make the play. That's tough for a little kid to kind of slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I was running around like a buzzsaw when I was in the American League starting out, and even in the NHL. And until you got to watch players too. You got to watch hockey and figure out what they're doing too, and some of the stars are doing, and then you kind of pick it up and you learn more and more. And it took me my whole career, you know, especially took me even, you know, to my late 20s to be more effective.
Were you effective when we played together in Chicago? You were a vet at that point. You'd played for, gosh, almost 10 years. Do you remember telling me, hey, Johnny, you go in the corner, no matter what corner the puck's dumped in, take the hit, then I'll come and get the puck. Was that one of your strategies, just letting me get buried?
Yeah, well, they couldn't reach your shoulders anyway, so you're fine. But, yeah, it's, you know, there's different tricks of the trade, and as you become more efficient with your defense partner, then you have better chemistry, and you're out of the zone a lot quicker. You know, I did learn a lot from Q. You know, he was a big – and as you know, John, he was a big person with using your stick and being effective that way and taking things away. And you know, as much as you feel like you should be learning that right away and from every coach, it just wasn't – if you don't emphasize it and keep talking about it day in and day out, then it kind of goes by the wayside. And I really – you know, say what you want. I enjoyed Joel and I learned a lot from him. And it was almost one of the first coaches that I ever, you know, was like, it was such a big factor for him and the way that he wanted to play. And then you're like, wow, this works. And I'm going to keep doing it. And it keeps working. So I give a lot of credit to him, you know, just talking to him and watching him and listening to what he wanted his players to do, and he became more effective.
So speaking of stick work, where did you come up? For those of you who haven't watched Brian play, he's just a smooth operator out there. But the one telltale thing he does, whenever he's going back for the puck, he always dusted his tape off with his stick by banging his stick on the ice. Where did that come from? Why did you outdo that?
That's probably a balance issue. I didn't do it on like, okay, I'm gonna stick tap. I hear you. Now that I don't even think about that. So you brought that up. I would never even think that I did that or whatever. It was almost a balance, I guess, you know, and it's probably not a great thing, but it was just kind of I don't know. I never even thought about that until right now when you said that, and like, yeah, I did do that. Like, I would never think about that.
It was every single time in practice, in the game. It was like Michael Jordan with the tongue when he was going to dunk it. You knew Soupy was gearing up for something. He'd go back and bang his stick. And you would lift it up pretty high and you'd whack it. And then you would go. I'd be like, oh, okay, out of the way. Here comes Soupy. It's hilarious.
Now that I'm going to watch like old games, I'm going to be giggling all the time thinking about you when I'm doing that.
Oh, it was just like, it was so funny. I loved it. I tried to emulate it, but I would always drop my stick. All right. So you're in the development now. What's the end game for you? Like what's your goal?
I don't know yet. We'll see. I'm enjoying this right now. I have three young kids, trying to be a good dad, trying to be around, take them to things. So this has been a good mix. And they've allowed me to go into meetings and listen and learn. And just trying to be somebody for the Blackhawks to, you know, I don't know if one day I'd get into higher management and then get on the road and get working more and doing more, but for me, I'm really happy with this right now and learning from Stan Bowman and Norm McIver have been really good to me. So it's just kind of learning the ropes and seeing what, you know, all the things that go on and all the people that are involved in it. You truly don't know when you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian, I'm looking through some of your career stats here and you put up some pretty big numbers, but you're definitely, from looking at the stats, a pass first defenseman where you're putting up a couple goals, especially early in your career, 2, 3, maybe 4 goals plus, you know, 40 assists or something. And then you played in Finland during the lockout and put up some big points there. Your first year back in the NHL in 05-06, you put up 12 goals. What did that come from, like something you picked up overseas? You changed your workout? Like how did that number jump up so high?
I think it was a situation a little bit. I was playing, Danny Breer and Chris Drury were on that team that year, and I picked up quite a few of them on the power play. I finally got confidence in the league during that year. My first year back, played a lot of hockey in Finland during the lockout, and best thing for me, but kind of the setup a little bit on the power play. As John knows, I have one of the hardest shots in the history of hockey.
A bomb, absolute bomb.
So shooting's not my forte, but that year it was like, I kind of shoot the odd, believe me, I do not have a hard shot. And I definitely know that, but I would shoot a one timer and it was all about just height and placement on the power play. And I scored a few more that way. I would have liked to have gotten to that 10 number a few more times, obviously in my career. But there was one thing with my dad, we always talked about, like if I talked to him before games and stuff, he's like, shoot the puck. And I'd be talking to myself, shoot the puck. But I'd never shoot the puck. So I was always kind of like always been the pass first guy, but kind of the setup that year with those two guys, they're elite players and we had really good power play. So it kind of worked out that way.
Yeah. We had Ryan Miller on in the fall and he was pretty honest about, you know, some of his frustrations with like how good you guys were with those Sabres rosters and how close you guys came a couple of times to making a serious run. And he kind of said, you know, I think we all thought we were going to go deeper and do it more often and do it every year. And then he mentioned like Drury got traded, Breer got traded, you got traded. It kind of came apart. So I guess, you know, looking back, would you say the same thing, that you kind of expected to go on deeper playoff runs with that team?
Yeah, it's probably one of the biggest regrets that I had, you know, not winning a cup in Buffalo and even not even getting the Stanley Cup finals. We lost back-to-back conference finals. I don't even know what to say about the whole situation. The first year coming out of the lockout, we had such a good team in 05-06, I think it was. We ran into a ton of injuries on the back end. Out of our 7 defensemen that we had, there was 3 left. It was just, you know, I was playing about 18, 19 minutes a game during the whole season. And then in the playoffs, I was playing 30, 32, and it was just got us, you know, it was just because of all the injuries. And we lost Tim Connolly to an injury. It just kind of, I don't think we got the depth that we needed to, you know, at the trade deadline there to be ready and prepared for it. And then we lost some guys, and it was just, I think, I don't know, if maybe there's a little bit more forward thinking, we could have, you know, kept that team together a little bit more, and we were going through a number of different issues. But It is definitely frustrating not winning. You know, Buffalo's dying for a winner, so it's it was fun playing there at that time, and fans still. That's basically I was there this past year, and basically, you know, they're like, oh, we love that. That's all they pray for. They've been in such dire need for a winner now, and that's the last kind of winning team they've had, and that's all they think about. And it's kind of, in a way, it's a little bit sad, you know, to think that.
They're never going to win, not anytime soon.
No, it's going to be tough, but, you know, for the fans, I hope they do, whether it's football or hockey. But, yeah, I think they have the big piece, but they need to fill in around him, that's for sure.
Yeah, they've just been kind of – they need to get some solidification in the upper management area to kind of build a team. But anyways, okay. There is no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, they're your online wagering experts. Speaking of regret, I find it interesting. I've been traded a few times. Did you know you were going to get dealt from Chicago after 2011? Or what was going into that offseason?
It was my decision.
Okay.
So I had a
– So you demanded a trade. You said trade me
right now. No, I did not demand a trade. I did not demand a trade. They came to me with one. And you know what? It was just a situation. And we all know the cap situation.
Yep.
At that time, there was players like Wade Redden playing in the minors that shouldn't have been playing in the minors. And I, you know, I was thinking about it. There was a case of that. I'm like, I don't want to be sent down just because of my contract and things like that. There's a number of things, you know, maybe even playing more of a prominent role. Do I wish I... You know, I can't say anything bad about Florida because I probably had one of my best seasons my first year in Florida there. So, you know, and it was interesting. It's a part of our life and our kids. We had a couple kids there. So, you know, I never want to take that away. You can never look back on things. But,
yeah,
you know, just kind of a decision I felt that was right for my hockey career at that time. Not saying that other than that, I just felt like it was the right thing to do for my hockey career.
So they approached – did you have a no trade clause? Is that why?
Yeah, partial okay. one, yeah. So,
but all right.
For me, it was the best thing for me, I felt like. Whether it was or not, that's kind of the decision I made.
Yeah, and then there's no tax in Florida for the people who don't realize that. When you get paychecks, you get state tax taken off, and Florida doesn't have any. So that's kind of an incentive going there, and then Dallas as well. Those are not bad cities to play in. But anyways, that's a whole other topic. So – when you, gosh, what was I going to ask? I got all worked up about the stinking
trades.
Tim, what was I going to ask?
I don't know. Probably something boring.
Okay, go ahead, Tim, if you have one. Sorry, Soupy. Gosh.
That's fine.
John and I were going over questions beforehand. And one of the ones I wanted to ask you is who was your favorite defensive partner from your career? Sure. And he was like, obviously it's going to be me. But I guess separate from John, who was your favorite player to play with?
I had some good partners that I worked well with, you know, like, Nicholas Yarmolson was awesome to play with. I played with him when he was 21 at that point when we won. He was great. The other guy that I played with was a really, really underrated player was, in Buffalo. I played with, Spacek, Jaro Spacek, great guy. Great human being, really good player, underrated, played on, you know, he made some good runs with some teams in the playoffs as well. So he was really good that I played with. Those two guys come to mind. That Yarmolson was awesome to play with. He'd go back and he would take hits like John would, but he would he wouldn't complain. So he's a warrior. So he was an easy guy to play with.
That's so funny. Yeah, I didn't like getting hit. But all right, so you're 41 now. You played, gosh, until what, 38, 37, 38?
I turned 38 that summer. So
how did you do that? Because there's not many guys who last that long. Was there? Because it's not like you were this big stud coming out of juniors. You were drafted, gosh, like in sixth round. So how did you get to the NHL and then last so long? How does that happen? I know it's a pretty vague question, but it's just kind of fascinating when fifth rounders play over 1,000 games. That doesn't happen often.
Well, I got drafted, and obviously when I got drafted in 97, if you weren't 6'6", 6'1", you weren't going to go anywhere in the top of the draft. I still remember my draft day, one of the worst days ever. I sat there for 6.5 hours waiting to be called. And you see guys that go ahead of you that are 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 6'. Are you 6'7", John?
I'm 6'8.5".
6'8.5", those guys. So
I didn't get drafted, though, just so you know.
I got you. But so that's kind of how that happened. And then I went back to junior for 2 more years, kept improving. My last year I was Canadian Hockey League Player of the Year, and so I just kept on getting better and better.
So I don't want to cut you off, Soupy. Let me ask you about that. How frustrating is that when you see guys getting drafted who you have played with and against and you know you're better? Is that demoralizing a little bit?
A little bit. It's definitely – I always had a fuel, so that wasn't the problem. I was going to fuel myself no matter what. It's a little bit frustrating, but – you know, then I went to Buffalo and I couldn't get in the lineup, you know, for a couple of years. It was a grind to get in the lineup until after that lockout. Even that lockout year, I think I had 44 points. I was a healthy scratch the first 2 games of the season. So, you know, I was almost on a path of where am I going to go with this game of hockey? Do I go back to Europe and play there, or what's going to happen to me? It was kind of like extremely frustrating, and once those kind of rules kind of changed a bit, obviously it helped me. I felt like I could have played in the old rules too, but I finally got opportunities and got head coaches that believed in me, and it kind of took off from there. So that's kind of where that all kind of went from and happened. I still remember the game I played in Florida. I was healthy scratch the first 2 games, and then I played in Florida. A guy got hurt the game before and was on the power play. I think I had a couple assists, and then the season just went from there. And finally, somebody, you know, it's nice to have a coach that believed in you at that point, finally.
Mm-hmm. What's it like? So your last season in Florida, you had the opportunity to go back there. I think they were offering you, what, like 4 or 5 schmil. You decided to leave that money on the table and go back to Chicago. Was that just because you knew it was your last year and you wanted to go home and kind of have a nice farewell tour, or –
No, I didn't know it was my last year. It was just wife, kids. It just felt like it was the right thing to do for myself. And Florida was kind of, there were some great guys there. I don't think I loved playing there. It's just a different atmosphere after you play in Buffalo. You play in Chicago, the atmosphere, the fans, mm-hmm. the excitement. I just kind of wanted to get that back into my life a little bit and enjoy it that way. And, you know, it was a situation where we made that decision, whether it's right or wrong, but it was just kind of the decision I felt like it was going to be best, you know, even for my kids to see, and even though they're young, but, I definitely don't regret that decision.
Yeah, I think people have a hard time wrapping their head around the atmosphere and the environment for players. It's so much more enjoyable, and you play better when there's fans, when you feel like it's hockey season. I had the same kind of thing when I was in Arizona, where I'd wake up and you'd go to the pool and then you go to the rink and no one would be there. It's hard to get like ramped up for a game, every single game. It's so much easier when you're in Chicago or Buffalo or teams like that, where there's fans milling around and stuff like that. It really does make a big difference.
But there is, John, and as you know this, there's some teams that are doing that are that would be great to play for in warmer climates. Like I love
San Jose,
Tampa Bay. That stadium rocks. It is packed every night. It is fun to play there in Tampa. So you know, there's some. It just hasn't kind of caught on in South Florida too much. And it's, you know, it's frustrating. We had some. Our first year we went, you know, obviously we made the playoffs and went to game 7 against Jersey, who eventually went to the finals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got some excitement, but then it just kind of went downhill the next year after that. It's just, you got to sustain it. And there have been teams that have done extremely well. San Jose, obviously. And
Dallas is good.
Tampa. Dallas has come on. So, you know, those places are fun to play.
What if you could look back, gosh, you played for so long, what's the high and what's the low of your career? What's the worst part and what's the best part?
Ooh, I don't know. Like obviously early on in my career when I wasn't playing, but you know, that's what makes you a better player too, right?
If you
go through that adversity. Honestly, the low was not winning in Buffalo, Stanley Cup, the first year. Our team was so good. And we lost to Carolina in 7 games. They ended up going on to win. So that was probably the real low point. And then obviously Chicago, just seeing the whole excitement and the growth of the team, you know, and winning it and the city. That was the highest of the high right there.
So what's next, the Hall of Fame for you?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's in the cards, but I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I'm, you know, just enjoying my time here in Chicago. Got a lot of good friends here now, and away from hockey and in hockey, so it's worked out pretty good.
I don't know. I think you could make the Hall of Fame. I wouldn't sell yourself short, Soupy. You're a pretty good player.
I'd like to be. If you put me in the Hall of Fame, I'd like to be in John Scott's Hall of Fame. I'll take that any day.
You're in there. You were. Geez, out of my best D partners, it's funny. I liked playing with Marek Zidlicky. And then you're right up there too. You guys, it's just make the game easy.
He was a good player, Zidlicky.
Oh man, was he smooth. But yeah, you guys were, he had a little more hands, but you were more patient. But it was just, I love playing with a skill guy.
A funny story with him is him and I came into the league, I think the same year, because when I played in Finland, he was in the Finnish league playing on, I think he was on another team there in the Finnish league. So I played against him over there as well. And I always admired his game and liked his game and liked watching him.
He's got one of the best set of hands I've ever played with.
Yes. He had a really good shot.
Yeah. Not as good as yours.
Thank you.
But he could like throw a sauce like 20 feet high and have it land completely flat. I was always amazed that he could do that.
Like, and then what would you do with it, John?
Oh, no, I wouldn't touch it. Yeah. I remember when I played with my D partners, I was like, if we go D to D, never put it on my backhand because it's never going to end well. Just don't do it, please. You did get me into a fight, Soupy. Do you remember Minnesota that Stavits ran you?
Yeah. I do remember that. Right in the right-hand corner.
Yep. Yeah.
And I after the fight, I'm like, thanks, John. But you didn't – like, it was fine. You didn't need to do that. But I obviously appreciate that.
It sounded worse than it was, I think.
Yeah, right. And plus, it was in Minnesota. You wanted to show the old fans a thing or two. And
I know. They're new tough guy. Up. Yeah, right. Stavits. Yeah. I used to tell guys like that. They'd be like, let's fight. And I go, buddy, I beat guys like you up on the way to the fight. So I could beat it. That's funny stuff. The old days. So I'll probably see you around once this lockout ends. We can go do an event here and there.
Yeah, I know. We'll get back to Chicago and then you know, obviously that prospect camp in Traverse City won't be happening this year, but no. It's a beautiful area up there.
Yeah, we'll have to grab a few drinks. Maybe not too many for you, apparently, Mr. Hangover all the time. Oh, my goodness.
I'm a lightweight now, as you know, when you got to get up at 6 a.m. with 3 kids. You day drink now. You don't night drink.
3 kids, that's half of what I have, Soupy. So let's just pick your game up.
I'm done.
All right, buddy. This was great.
This hey, was I appreciate cool. guys having me on. That was a lot of fun.
No problem, buddy. Yeah, thank you for doing it. We'll see you around, definitely.
Okay.
All right, Soup. See ya. Good.
All right. See ya. Bye, Tim. Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter at @dropping_gloves for episode highlights, behind the scenes content, sneak peeks, and giveaways. Check out johnscottallstar.com/shop for merchandise including t-shirts, hats, hoodies, and so much more. And please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's so important to helping us grow so we can keep delivering the hockey content and interviews with the players you love. Thanks, and see you next time.